Hey everybody, welcome back to Stone Cold Shots, the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. What we usually do here is we
review
and recap a wrestling pay-per-view, you know, from any era, from any timeline. I feel like I've been saying this increasingly frequently recently. We're doing something a little different here today. we've really gone off book in the last little bit of the year.
Away from the regular format that we usually have.
But before
we get to that, why don't you guys introduce yourselves and tell the people your name and tell the people what your New Year's resolution is.
Well, my name is Josh Felix Pryor, and I am the internet darling, not only of this podcast, but I feel of the entire internet, right?
The internet darling.
Yeah. My New Year's resolution is probably, I'm going to say it's to lose 15 pounds by the end of February.
Dang, that's a lot of pounds in a little bit of time.
Listen, I've got experience. As a former fat kid, I know the ropes. I know what to do.
Oh, good.
And I feel like 15 pounds, reasonable. Okay. Reasonable.
Okay.
I'm going to get into a Jimmy O'Connor shape before the end of February.
Who?
Jimmy Okada.
Oh, Okada.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Okada.
What the fuck is Jimmy coming from?
I don't even know. Is that like a...
The Jimmy Okada thing. It's a long...
Is that Okada specific or any man?
Like, I think the idea is that it's supposed to be, like, someone who is, like the anti-smark.
Oh.
Where they're just like, New Japan Pro Wrestling, I don't even know who this Jimmy Okada guy is. Like, it's supposed to be kind of dismissive.
Okay.
But people have just made it a joke.
A joke.
Look it up, pal.
Again, check the abs at the end of February.
All
right. Be posting about it on the pod.
All right, yeah, can't wait for that. My name is Lauren. I'm a regular darling. I guess my New Year's resolution, if we're like going for, like you reminded me, I think I should definitely make it a resolution to get a gym membership.
Okay.
I keep saying I'll do that. Initially, I was like, I'll do that when I'm done my master's. And then I was like, I'll do that when I've paid off my loans or like when I get a full-time job. And now I've got a full-time job, hoping to pay off the student loans real soon.
Mm.
So should get that gym membership.
Yes. If I can inspire just one person.
You guys can get sick abs together.
Yeah. I also want to read more. I don't read anymore.
I'm Campbell Falconer. I went wrestling specific with my resolution for the pod.
That wasn't a parameter you put on us?
I'm going to sound like a real piece of shit. I'm going to try and watch one episode of Raw or SmackDown a month because I haven't watched any main roster basically since AEW started.
I think we watched part of a SmackDown.
Maybe. Like, I think we watched part of a SmackDown as a pre-drink for going out and doing something on a Friday because we're cool kids. We do things on Friday.
Campbell's already got a six-pack, so it doesn't have to work.
I got a six-pack right
here. He held up his beer, ladies and gentlemen.
So we're doing a little year in review. A little like
something different.
Like the Spotify Wrapped of this wrestling podcast. That's a current reference, right? This is going to be just like Baby Yoda holding a cup of coffee.
Yeah. I'm completely spray-painted silver right now like Kanye West at the opera.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What
yeah.
the fuck?
These are memes. Keep up. You know?
I know all of them except for the spray paint.
So, if you are a longtime listener of our podcast, you know that we usually like to close out every episode with our high spot and our botch spot. So we're going to close out the year with some high spots and botch spots of wrestling in 2019, right? We're going to talk about an individual wrestler, our favorite and least favorite feud, a pay-per-view, and a weekly show.
Yeah.
So before we get into this, like, how do you guys feel about, like, the state of wrestling in 2019, I guess, like, as a whole?
Oh my God, it's been a whirlwind of a dang wrestling year. Like, right? I feel like we're in a completely different spot.
Yeah. I'm optimistic.
I am, too. It's weird. It's weird. I feel like I'm... It's a weird space to be in because I feel like a lot of the shows that used to be, like, very important to me, like Raw and SmackDown and Lucha Underground, have, like, let me down really hard. So they're, like, not on my radar at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been, like, all about NXT. And then when AEW came to be, now AEW, and I guess sometimes New Japan, but not really.
But, like, if the worst thing on TV, as far as wrestling goes, I guess right now is ROH. You know, if you think about it, like, Impact's doing some pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
AEW, NXT. You know, I would say maybe Raw is maybe the worst thing on TV. But, you know, it's a good time to be a wrestling fan. You got options. And you got options pretty much 5 days a week.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then pay-per-views. And then, like, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really can't think of a better time to be a fan.
It's weird. Do you know what I mean, though, where I feel like I'm... There's so many more options, which is inspiring, but I feel less engaged in general because of all the options.
It's like that's, saturation, right?
I think that's kind of my thing, is that, like, if you had asked me in September how I felt about this, I would be, like, fucking over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling... I don't know if it's just because it's, like, the holidays as well, and, like, my job's getting crazy and, like, that kind of shit, but I'm feeling, like, so... suffocated.
Sure.
Maybe suffocated is like too much, but like definitely kind of a thing where like the only thing that I watched last week was a Dynamite, and like I didn't watch Dynamite until like I think we watched that on like Saturday.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like impossible to keep up with everything you're interested in.
I would say it's like wrestling went through such a depression period, I would say, that any bright spots that came out of like New Japan or like the first AEW pay-per-view or anything like that was such a like a breath of fresh air that like we watch it and be like, oh shit, like this is great. But now like the content is like regularly like pretty good. But now it's like, again, like a saturation thing where it's like, now I'm like, I have too much to watch.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I think like the start of the year was like kind of, you know, whatever. And then like once... Basically from like Double or Nothing on through like we had like an amazing wrestling summer, right? Like we had the AEW stuff. We had some like really good NXT stuff. The G1 this year was insane.
Yeah.
And then I think the fall, once all of the new TV deals started in the fall, is like it's gotten like a little too much. I'm assuming that like by February, I think we're gonna sort of like hit an level even keel out again, and everything's gonna kind of level out. But so I'm very excited as well. I think optimistic is like a really, really good way to put it, what you said earlier.
Yeah, like, and I feel like it's gonna get to a point where people are just gonna like pick their poison in the week, right? Like they're just gonna say, you know, I'm just gonna watch AEW and NXT, or I'm just gonna watch like, yeah, whatever. Like you can pick and choose what you want as far as like wrestling goes moving forward.
No.
And I feel like the, you know, the Monday Night Standard is going to be, you know, the way of the dinosaurs. It's it's going to be done.
Yeah.
And I can see Raw completely falling off the map, you know?
That's Oh, I like tried to tune into Raw a couple of weeks ago and I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
And then I just switched over to the hockey game.
Three hours of wrestling, kind of same old writing. There's options now, right?
Yeah, so I will say that, like, though I feel, like, slightly less engaged because we are a little oversaturated, every show that I do watch is so much more exciting and engaging and, like, fulfilling than I'm thinking back a year or two in the past. Like, we would watch Raw and SmackDown very regularly, but it wouldn't be nearly as, like, exciting or, like, satisfying. Like, every episode I watch now, I'm like, so that was some fucking great wrestling. That was just some great TV or
it's,
whatever.
Yeah, it's like, we've basically swapped, like, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, which we used to watch basically every week.
Yeah.
So about 6 hours of wrestling, we've now traded in for 4 hours of wrestling, because usually I'll watch Dynamite and NXT.
Yeah.
And it's like I've cut down the amount that I'm watching by a third regularly, but like it's that quality within those 4 hours is fucking great.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like, and like, not to like harp too much on this, but like, you know, Raw used to be trash, SmackDown used to be trash. Like at the end of every show, everybody can be complaining, and I'd be like, well, see you next week.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, this is just what so we true. Do, yeah. you know? So,
yeah.
Optimistic.
Well, yeah, I think optimistic is a good way to put it. Let's get into the real meat and potatoes of this episode here.
Yeah. Right?
Enough vamping. that was one hell of a marin, guys. We did it.
I feel like an old alcoholic comic right now.
Yeah, so I went down the street the other day.
Well, I guess Marin's never going to be on the podcast now.
Yeah, I lost
love to ask him about his high spots and botch spots of filming Glow.
You don't want to hear about his high spots.
So we're gonna kick it off. We're gonna get right into the nitty gritty of it. We're not gonna tease this out like a fucking Slammy Award show. We're going high spot wrestler of the year. Who do you got, Lauren?
Okay, so I was having a difficult time. I've got a lady and I've got a man.
Oh, okay.
I have three people. Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, you better not take all of my lists.
I'm going to go with my first two, though. I'll isolate my third, and hopefully one of y'all will bring them up.
No.
So I was stuck between Io Shirai,
mm-hmm.
Because I feel like she's just an all-around, like, extremely talented performer, and just very charismatic and obviously just stunning in ring, like her, just amazing. And I feel like NXT sort of figured out what to do with her this year, where, like, I think at the beginning of the year she was more boring, where, like, she was just
work rate.
She was with Kairi Sane, and yeah, exactly, she was work rate. She was with Kairi Sane, and they were like the angels
sky
of
pirates.
The sky or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Sky
the
Pirates.
Mask, the mask didn't do anything for me, like, for whatever reason.
I think the mask was kind of a holdover from Stardom, though.
But yeah, it's still, I don't like, mind the mask.
For me, I just wasn't, like, it didn't really mesh.
Yeah,
And there was a disconnect.
Yeah.
Like, before she turned.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they had nothing going for her for the longest time. Yeah. But then she turned, and she got really cool, and now everyone's really behind her, and she's very energetic and, like, easy to latch on to.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like she really came into her own this year. Should I go into my other potential best?
Or? Why don't we let Josh and I go? Maybe we'll cover them. Maybe we won't.
Yeah.
And we'll give you
see.
Room in a second.
We'll see.
Yeah, give some breathing space.
I think Io Shirai is like a great pick, though. Yeah. She had a fucking banger year. And her heel turn was great. And she's been like...
Her matches have been like fucking off the charts.
She's a ridiculous performer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't even look behind her anymore. She just jumps.
That War Games moonsault was fucked.
Yeah.
Like,
she she looks behind her as she climbs, and then she stands and just jumps. She doesn't look behind her to
like
make
I've
sure no one's moved.
I've always
it's
said
crazy.
Darby Allin is the male Io Shirai.
Josh, who was your high spot wrestler of the year?
I mean, for me, it's got to be Bray Wyatt.
Wow!
It's got to be Bray Wyatt.
Okay.
I mean,
shit.
That guy came from the ashes.
It's mm-hmm. true.
He came from literally like... this guy's never going to get back from the burial job that WWE did to him. And he's like, give me the ball and I can run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote his own segments. He produced his own shit. You know, like everything. This is all like a Bray Wyatt production.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And him coming from that is like the phoenix out of the ashes. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
You're right.
And now he's the most engaging, like, he's the most interesting thing to watch on Friday nights,
mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, on WWE TV,
Is he still?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I would say right now, Bray Wyatt is the most interesting part of WWE.
That's good to know. I remember I was a little worried about his story trajectory after they, like... I feel like they botched his match.
With Seth Rollins?
Was it Seth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, if you look even like what he's doing with Daniel Bryan right now,
mm-hmm.
It's a callback. So he's calling back like the stuff that, you know, like Daniel Bryan turning on the Wyatt family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's saying, like, you know, it's like, I remember, like, the Fiend remembers.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's so, and it's storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's interesting. And then he's like, there's just, like, so many layers to the Fiend and Bray Wyatt character. Not only is it, like, entertaining, but it's, like, it engages me as a wrestling fan. So, you know, like, I really had to think about this, and it was, like, up between, I would say, Chris Jericho and Bray Wyatt for me.
Mm.
But Bray Wyatt, I think, undisputedly, came back in the biggest way possible.
That's
and I think that's,
true.
For me, that's got to be the superstar.
No.
Of 2019.
Yeah, do you remember us, like, losing our minds when The Fiend debuted and we heard that theme song for the first time? You were there, Josh.
Dude, I was there at, like, SummerSlam and was watching it, and, like, the lights, like, and I was watching it, I'm like, this is so cool.
We were at home just being like, wow.
With, like you know, the old Bray Wyatt head lantern and, like, everything about that was probably, like, the coolest entrance I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I'm including, like, Jericho's debut and all that. Like, that's probably it for me. Like,
it was awesome.
I think my thing, and like, I appreciate everything that you said, but, like, that entrance was amazing. I think everything that they've done with him since on pay-per-view has really kind of... Like, it's one thing, it's like, all of the storytelling's great, the Firefly Funhouse stuff is still fantastic, a lot of the, like, attacks and, like, him showing up have been great.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to the matches, the, like, it's so hard for me to, like, care about the matches when it has, like, the fucking red lights.
The red lights are the absolute drizzling shits.
Yeah.
I can 100% do without that. Like, the first match he had with Finn Balor,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was perfect.
Mm. It was so good.
It's like you're building this, like, Undertaker-like whatever,
mm-hmm.
who's, like, this unstoppable force. You don't need the red light.
Exactly.
Red light's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, but, like, that's such a throwback to, like, the maggot projections.
Yeah.
And my other thing is that, like, and this is, the lights is, like, more of... like a, I think, a bigger deal. And I think just in general, the idea of, like, they're booking him right where they're not having the Fiend, like, wrestle on TV.
Yeah.
You know, they're only having the Fiend wrestle on pay-per-view is, like, really great. It, like, allows you to build to these matches.
And I even like that, like, Bray Wyatt is booked against The Miz and the Fiend's not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I like that because it's, like, what they should have done with Finn Balor.
Totally.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's, like, the Fiend is there and the Fiend is, like,
I think my thing is just, like, the pay-per-view matches that I've seen The Fiend wrestle has been, like, all about the entrance, and then the match itself has been, like, okay. Like, the match with Seth was, like, even without the weird count-out, it was, like, okay. The match with Daniel Bryan was, like, all right, you know,
I really liked the Daniel Bryan match.
Okay.
I'll say the Seth Rollins match, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fault Bray Wyatt for the shitty booking.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because everything else surrounding him, he still kept interest. Like, anybody else in that same situation would have lost all of their momentum and the fans would have turned on him.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Nah.
But the fans are so invested in this character that, you know, Bray Wyatt's still, like, the most over thing in WWE.
Yeah, they're willing to look past it.
So, and this is, like, a little bit more nitpicky, but I really wish that the Bray Wyatt severed head lantern had just been on that first debut. Because that to me felt like a thing of, like, I am putting this character to bed now. Like, Bray Wyatt, as you knew him, is dead. This is now, like, the Firefly Funhouse, the Fiend.
Hmm.
Him coming out with that every time feels like they're kind of just, like, clinging to a thing that they should have let go. To me,
$500 I know. On it.
See, I feel like that's the real reason. Is just, like,
they spent so much money making that. I'm sure it looks really good.
But, like, honestly, like, Bray Wyatt's got to be it. Like, and again, it was a real, like, chore picking the number one. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nah.
What do you think?
Yeah. So my high spot wrestler, and like, this is kind of a thing where it's like, it's what we were talking about earlier with, like, oversaturation of wrestling and, like, where we were at the start of the year of, like, watching Raw and SmackDown every week and being like, it's fine. Like, there's a couple of things that I'm hanging on to here, but, like, they're, you know, and being at a spot where I, like, I almost like want to be engaged with wrestling more than I actually am. And the like the one I think the one wrestler this year that I have watched and like every match and every segment that they've been part of, I have been absolutely fucking glued to the TV. Like I like not checking my phone, not fucking anything, has been Darby Allin.
Okay.
Oh yeah, well that makes sense.
That like, was my second choice.
Yeah. And like something about his like his speed, his performance, his character, and the way that they're booking him in AEW has been like when he is not on an episode of Dynamite, I'm like, well, fuck, you know, like he's literally one of the main reasons that I tune into that show.
Sure, yeah.
And like, I definitely think part of it comes out of like,
he's the most punk like wrestler.
So that's kind of a thing is like when I was a kid, like when I was in high school and like if I was watching like a movie or whatever and there was like a guy in like the background of a scene with a leather jacket, I would like pause the movie to see like what pins or like what patches that dude had on or like what shirt that guy was wearing and be like, oh, I gotta check out that band. And like there's definitely like kind of a little part of that that has like carried over into my adult life, that like when people are when a guy names himself after fucking Darby Crash from the Germs, like yeah, that guy is already like 100% like in my good books. I mean,
like,
you know,
come on, like he
and but it's like he's also like you could say the same about like Seth Rollins naming himself after Henry Rollins, and like but like Seth Rollins does not captivate me the way that like Darby Allin in his performance and in his like the float over stunner, the coffin drop, the fucking like body bag full of thumbtacks and shit. Like everything that he does is so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Captivating is a good word.
Yeah, captivating. He has such a fucking weird charisma that you just like want to see how this is going to go and like what's going to happen. Like,
disregard for his own body and safety.
See, totally. That's terrifying, but it is so contributes to his character.
I feel like there's a level in between what he's doing and the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has to be like that, like flagrant.
Mm-hmm.
When he's doing that shit in order to like execute this shit.
No.
And if he was any more like caring about what he did, he would probably like botch shit. Like he like there'd be like but he's so good at being like, no, I'm just going for it. No.
Yeah.
Like he's got that like disregard.
It's also a thing. I was reading an interview where he was saying that like he doesn't see himself wrestling for too much longer if everything goes according to plan. That like the reason that he's so reckless is that he's trying to use like the platform that he has at AEW to make a name for himself so that he can start making movies. Like he wants to be like a horror director or something, which is like, sure, whatever. Sure,
whatever.
In the meantime, he's killing it. I'm like super stoked on
if
that.
If there was like a 2020 people to watch thing on this, Darby Allin would have been like my number one for that.
Okay. Yeah. Who was your runner up high spot, because I think we might have the same guy down here, because I also had a runner-up and it was not Chris Jericho.
So Darby Allin was my second place and third place was Jon Moxley.
My runner-up was definitely Jon Moxley. I think you can't
he came out so hard this year,
like his run as the New Japan US champ, his run in the G1, his coming out in like AEW and just fucking crushing it there.
He's been flawless in ring and on his promos. He's been totally a new man and just killing it the whole way.
Honestly, and you can tell he's happy.
Yeah.
Which is like a huge thing, right? Like Jon Moxley just doing his like deathmatch stuff and like having the matches he wants to have.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a big promo guy. You know, he's just like a guy that likes.
It's, but that he being is said, really is like good at the promos that he's been cutting in AEW,
so good. Yeah. But like, but that's not where his bread is buttered. You know, his bread is buttered with like the in ring kind of like entrance, like all like the you know the pyro and ballyhoo that goes along with that. Mm-hmm. And he's been killing it, right?
Yeah.
I think that was my thing is that I was like trying to go between like an objective and subjective,
right?
High spot like my wrestler of the year, and I kind of erred a little bit more towards like who like presses it's my you. buttons, who like, and that's definitely Darby Allin, but I definitely think that from an objective standpoint, like the wrestler that has had the biggest year from leaving WWE to like going to Japan to come AEW, like Moxley has been the guy that everybody has talked about for the last 12 months.
Absolutely.
You know, like he has defined 2019 for me.
I want to say, like, so Jericho was my runner-up, but you know, just because Jericho's amazing and he can reinvent himself 1,000 times.
Yeah. That fucking lexicon bit, man, was like,
he's so good at like just like taking the like whatever you think about Jericho, and he's like, I'm not doing that anymore. This is my new thing.
Yeah.
And then getting it over to like the level that he gets, like, who does that?
It's ridiculous.
At like 50 years old?
Yeah.
Also, another runner-up, MJF.
Yeah.
For the record, that guy is going to be a complete...
You
want
to talk about like somebody 20 to watch in 2020, yeah. MJF
is going to be
sure.
the fucking future of wrestling.
I love him.
Let's jump over to Botch Spot, our wrestler this year that we think was like... I'll go first on this one because like I think my botch spots here are like maybe a little hot take. Like, I went more something that I had high expectations for that like they kind of fucked up.
It's or Mojo Rawley.
Mojo Rawley will never be a botch spot for me. Mojo Rawley is my high spot wrestler of the year.
No. Even with the blue veins coming from his eyes.
The Black Flag Shattered album cover. No, my botch spot as a wrestler was Kushida.
Oh, wow.
That
is a hot take.
I like, and that's nothing, I don't put that
it's
on
his
him.
Booking, I guess.
That it's the thing where it's like when like I feel like he had that kind of like send off from New Japan and everybody was really excited for him to show up in NXT, and I think for how good NXT has been this year, for how well they've elevated talents like Keith Lee and like Dominik Dijakovic, like guys that I did not give a shit about at all, and the level that they've reached, there is absolutely no excuse in my mind for Kushida not being part of like War Games or Survivor Series or like...
I'm going to counter that though. It took like Keith Lee up until like last month.
Mm-hmm.
To really get over, right?
Sure.
Like, Keith Lee wasn't on TV for the longest time.
Kushida hasn't been on TV for the longest time.
He's been injured.
It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
I know that like injuries have been part of it, but it's just like it's.
I get it, but like I feel like you just got to give Kushida time, and like WWE is so bad at booking Japanese wrestlers.
Yeah,
they're just terrible at it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like Kushida just has to find his thing. I don't think it's a time splitter thing. Like,
I don't know. I feel like he had a lot of hype coming in, and it went nowhere, even when he was being featured
on
TV.
He's still mid-card.
Yeah.
Like, he's still mid-card in NXT.
But it's, like,
but
I think
he
it's
shouldn't
just, like,
be.
But, like, you have to familiarize him with, like, the NXT mm-hmm. audience, and, like, he can put on amazing matches, and he has been, and he's been winning. Like, I feel like...
He was, yeah.
But I feel like with Kushida, like, you really have to, like... He has to go away from this time splitter gimmick.
Sure.
And he almost has to have like an Io Shirai moment.
That's the thing, is that like NXT's shortcut to getting someone over is just like turning them heel. Like, and I don't want to see Kushida just be like, oh, we need to turn Johnny Gargano heel.
Sure.
Or like, oh, we need to turn, you know, like, but at the same time, I'm so worried about him becoming the next like Cassius Ohno.
Yeah.
You know, of just like, yeah, this guy's a good hand, you know, that like he was one of my favorite wrestlers in New Japan. And I think like one of the best wrestlers out there right now.
Yeah.
And like, I understand that there's been like injuries, but I think even when he was on TV, there was nothing compelling. There was nothing like interesting that they did with him. He was just like a guy who has good work rate that went out and won matches. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. Like, that's fine for your debut. Come in, have your debut, beat somebody. But they needed, for me, they needed to immediately put him into, like, a feud.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They just had him win matches with no stakes.
Yeah.
And I really wanted more out of him. I'm hoping that 2020, they kind of turn that around.
But yeah.
Josh, who's your botch spot wrestler of the year?
This was between two people for me. The first one is Baron Corbin.
Oh, wow.
And Baron Corbin is one of those guys that is such a good natural heel. Like, he reminds me of, like, almost like an MJF kind of heel, right? Where it's like, people don't like you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have that genuine heat, but they just never executed on anything.
Mm-hmm.
My actual bot spot of the year is fucking Seth Rollins.
Oh.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins probably had the worst 2019. of any wrestler.
Is it Seth Rollins or Seth Rollins' Twitter that you...
the whole fucking thing, baby.
Yeah.
That guy just fucked up his entire 2019.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even all his fault, but he was a huge part of it. I would say
he's like 80% of the fault in that.
Mm-hmm.
You could not come across as more of a fucking dork on live TV with his fucking dorky promos. It's like white meat baby face.
You remember the man's man t-shirt?
Yes. The Becky Lynch thing didn't do him any... Like, it was just like this perfect storm of fucking dorkiness. And then at the same time he's doing the man's man thing with Becky Lynch, he's also feuding with, like, Will Ospreay online, saying, like, check your bank account.
Yeah.
Like,
he was just, like, tweeting like an idiot. And then, like, and then he would come on Raw the next week, and he would just, like, cut these fucking lame-ass promos.
Yeah.
And he went from, like, the most, like, adored person, and then he chalks it up to, like, oh, people just don't like the person on top, like Roman Reigns and John Cena. It's like, nobody liked Roman Reigns because he's cutting these fucking dorky-ass promos. I'm like, it's such an easy formula.
Yeah.
And you fell right into it. Plus, like, your Twitter, plus, like, everything else. Seth Rollins is still, like, one of the best guys in the ring in the entire company.
Mm-hmm.
But man,
how do you feel about the Architects of Pain?
I'm optimistic.
I didn't see that. I didn't mm-hmm. see Raw or SmackDown or Raw. Whatever. So I don't know a lot about it. But is it like they're his new J&J security?
And I think that's like a really great...
But more muscly?
More muscly.
Well, but like I think that's also a thing where it's like... Seth Rollins' like stature in the company has changed since he was like shitty blonde streak...
Yeah.
Corporate
and
Seth
he's a
Rollins
believable
with J&J,
like, threat, right?
And he's a believable threat. He doesn't have to play the chicken shit heel anymore. So his backup should be bigger dudes, and it's a great way to use Authors of Pain.
Because it seems unstoppable, right?
Totally.
But like, it's how they execute this. Mm-hmm. And like,
I think it's interesting. I also think that Seth Rollins over the past few years, like his biggest issue is that like anytime that he's a heel, you want him to be a face. And anytime that he's a face, you want him to be a heel.
But like,
and they just always kind of have the booking flip-flopped on him.
Sure, but like, and the, like, people are probably going to cheer him now.
Mm.
But at the same time, I mean, like, he's such a, like, a homer. Like, he's such a WWE, like, corporate guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're at the point where you can't, like, admit any wrongs with the company, and it's like, mm-hmm. we're the best, clearly, because we have the most money kind of, like, mentality. It's like... I don't know, like, there's just something so fucking, like, shitty about that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's going to work for him as a heel, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's totally going to work for him.
I think everything about him has always been geared towards being a heel. Like, I think that's what he's meant to be.
Yeah.
So they should just stick 100%. With that.
100%. Who's your botched wrestler of the year?
Mine, I have two, but one of them's more of an honorable mention. Straight up, like, the... Well, okay, no. I'll do my honorable mention first.
Mm-hmm. Get it out of the way.
Aaliyah.
Okay. Yeah, whoa, sure. Whoa.
Aaliyah.
Shots fired.
Aaliyah from NXT.
I don't think Aaliyah's botched. I think she just sucks.
That's what
Aaliyah's
I'm saying.
Aaliyah's probably listening to this right now and be like, what the fuck, Laura?
That's what I'm saying.
She's like from Toronto. Yeah.
She is from Toronto. I expect better from her. And she's just a bad wrestler and they have to let her go. Like, I hate how long she's been on... They keep trying to be like, and now she looks like this?
Yeah, and...
She wrestles the same, really bad, but, like, now like, she looks different.
We gave her Natalya's cat ears gimmick, and that didn't work. We gave her Carmella's gimmick, and that didn't work.
Yeah, now she's
wearing... We're all out of ideas.
Like, sliced-up leggings, and we'll pair her with this really hot, actually great wrestler woman. But anyway,
Who's your actual botch wrestler of the year?
Shane McMahon.
No.
Oh, yeah, good take.
Because he's a terrible wrestler, and he's terrible at speaking, and he's terrible at standing, and he's terrible at dancing, and he's terrible at... Like, he shouldn't be on my dang screen. Like, he shouldn't be in the ring.
X-Pac heat.
And he also, like, I think the thing about Shane is that, like, he drags down whoever
everybody
he is
he
in
touches.
A feud with. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he takes up way too much TV time.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They give his feuds... So much time.
His feud with Kevin
they
Owens.
Don't matter.
No.
We're not going to talk about that now.
Well, like, oh, okay. All right. I just think that, like, his of his feuds that he's had this year, he's made the other person look worse coming out on the other side.
Absolutely.
Which is, like, not at all what you want from, like, a corporate heel. You want, like, the baby face that is, like, the underdog against them to look better at the end, and that has not happened.
Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about feuds, let's move on to our feuds. Sure. Do you want to start? We'll go reverse this time. You want to start botched feud of the year?
Sure.
Because we already kind of seem to be on this.
Yeah, let me go.
Go for it.
Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. I hated that Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens feud went on for so long. And I literally, like, I felt like my brain cells were collapsing in on themselves when I was
like
watching
that. Like a neutron
that.
Star.
Yeah. It went on for so long, and then they would always give them these really long promo packages to be like, he's fighting the authority, and Shane is just so shitty, and it would just be so long, and it was the same thing over and over again.
Well, it wasn't
like,
good.
They also, like, it made Kevin Owens look like such a fucking dork,
he
right?
He looked like a dweeb.
Of him being like, I'm going to have my lawyers talk to you about unrightful termination. It's like, no, just fucking kick his ass.
Yeah. And like the time he was a referee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like he like
that was so mishandled because like even Kevin Owens in his performance of that was like, what the fuck you want me to do? Like he was just like,
and then
what
he,
the
then
fuck?
Then he like counted it. And then like Shane McMahon like totally punked him out.
Yeah.
After the thing. And it was just like, you look like the biggest fucking dweeb.
Everyone
entire,
does.
Yeah.
Like, they both looked awful from it. Yeah.
No.
What more do I have to say? Like, that's
I also, I feel like they just, like, don't know what they want to do with Kevin Owens right now.
Well, like, I feel like he's one of those people that they can depend on to do almost anything they want him
hand.
To do.
Maybe I think they figured it out by now.
He's a great hand.
But, like, I think, like, in the first half of the year when you had him, like, was he a face against Daniel Bryan, but a heel against Kofi?
Mm-hmm. I feel like he's
and
trying
then,
to find his footing, right?
Yeah, and I really don't like him using the stunner.
Yeah.
It feels lazy.
Yeah, if like the stunner was like more definitive, like Austin when he did the stunner, and mm-hmm. he got a pin every single time. Well, except later in his career when they like hit The Rock
with 100 stunners.
Yeah, stunners. But like if the center was like, oh shit, he's gonna pin him now.
But it's even, it feels like out of this feud with Shane McMahon, it just felt like a thing where it's just like, oh, we have this like ass kicker baby face against a McMahon, let's give him the stunner because it's not fucking obvious enough already.
Yeah.
And it just felt lazy. You know, the pop-up powerbomb was a great finisher.
Yeah.
Package pile driver.
Package pile driver.
Just, like, bring back the package pile driver.
Like, they're letting fucking Cole do the Panama Sunrise, and he's fucking bad at doing that.
And they
it's
tease.
It's because he's so
smart. Yeah.
they tease the package pile driver at the NXT War Games.
Mm-hmm.
I feel just, like, pull the trigger on it. That's, like, Kevin Owens, like, super finisher.
Yeah.
Just do it. Like, because, like, Kevin Owens is so awesome. He's so versatile.
Yeah.
Like, every backstage promo that he's in, I'm always engaged.
Yeah.
Every match that he has, I'm always, like, interested. Kevin Owens is, like, a star.
Yeah.
Just give him that, like, extra little... Give him the package pile driver.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's it.
No. My super hot take botched feud of 2019 was... Minoru Suzuki and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Nothing hot about that take.
Yeah.
Nothing hot about that.
That was
I forgot about
very
how much
a
that
thing.
Upset you. Like that just depressed you more than anything.
Yeah, because again, like you want to talk about like high expectations and such an insane build.
Yeah, you were telling me about like what that could be for like weeks before
with like him pulling out
the
like Kishin Liger and like trying to fucking stab him in the face.
I was like, from that card, I was like, that's the match I'm looking forward to the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I didn't see it, and I came here to like record a pod with you guys. I'm like, oh, how was the match?
And it was like, it was and fine.
It was fine. Like, I was like, oh.
It was like a 3.5 bald head match.
Ugh,
you know?
No.
And that had every reason to be almost a 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And almost.
I think it was the thing.
Because it had the long-term storytelling up in there. Yeah.
So my biggest thing is that I was holding out on this. I wasn't going to name this my botched feud of 2019. Because I was still holding out hope. I was like, maybe Liger's last match at Wrestle Kingdom Part 2 will be the final match against Suzuki where he brings out Kishin Liger. And like maybe that will cap off this feud. It will cap off his career. It will be like up there, like, second last Everybody's match happy. On Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah. And then his last his Jushin Liger's last match of all time, as it stands right now, it came out this week, the card is a fucking bullshit tag match against, like, fucking, like, I can't even remember who, because I just don't give a shit at all.
Poor baby.
I can't believe I'm so sorry.
I feel so bad.
Is it like it's just like you had it.
You had it, you know? Right there. I'm with you.
In the fucking palm of your hand. Like, and to
who's
have
crazy enough. Who's to take on Suzuki? Like, who's crazy enough?
It was like super murder Kishin Liger. Yeah. And like I think that's the thing, is like Suzuki, as we've said before, is like probably the best wrestler in the world over 50 right now.
Oh, easy.
And is like totally, he's still a guy that has like kind of an air about him as like an ass kicker.
Yeah.
And like what better way to cement him and cement his legacy?
Absolutely.
As like the guy who put down Jushin Liger in his last match.
Yeah.
Because like Suzuki is going to be one of those guys where like undoubtedly he's going to go on for a few more years and someone is going to have like a real marquee match to put him down.
Yeah.
And what better way to make that matter than have him finish Jushin Liger in his most dangerous Jay White form?
That's going to put him down.
I think it's going to be Will Ospreay.
Oh, but like you got to give it to Switchblade. That guy's the best wrestler of 2019. Did I not say that?
Josh, what was your botch feud for the year?
Man, so I look back and I think, what gave me the most angst in 2019? What did I tune out completely in 2019? The thing that came up over and over and over and over again was Roman Reigns versus fucking Baron Corbin.
Oh, okay.
Non-stop. It feels like this feud has been going on for 100 years. And it's not good. Never been good. And they haven't... And to cap it out, last week with the dog food on Roman Reigns' head...
Oh, I did hear about that.
I think the dog food is all right. Like, he calls himself...
No! I get it. Because they said it, you're the big dog, so you're hungry.
I think in a vacuum, the dog feud makes sense, but holy, I agree, fuck. In the context of this feud,
least been feuding since January. At least. I do not have the data or the numbers to back that up. They have at least been feuding since then.
Roman Reigns wasn't wrestling in January. He had leukemia.
Baron Corbin probably had something to do with that. I feel like... I don't know. I'm over it though. I'm over it. Yeah. It's like, give Baron Corbin something else. I was happy when Baron Corbin was feuding with Ricochet. At least it was something different.
Yeah. Mm.
But then he went right back to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Every single time.
They don't know what to do with either of those guys.
And Baron Corbin's like one of these guys that the people genuinely hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he could be so much better than he is.
Yeah. That's
and
why Roman, they're putting him against Roman, though.
Oh,
because
but like,
they can make Roman be cheered for if he's against Baron.
But like, that's Roman's the logic. Like, Roman's past that now.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Roman again.
Yeah, because he beat cancer.
Yeah. Put him in like a mid-card feud.
Mm-hmm.
Put him in like a good mid-card feud. And everybody would be so happy. But everybody's so sick of this guy. It was like John Cena and Randy Orton.
Yeah.
We saw those guys fight so many fucking times. I'm so over it.
I can't believe nobody said Lashley and Rusev for their botched feud. Oh my
god, are you kidding? That's the best thing on Monday Night Raw.
I haven't been watching enough to even like see that.
Yeah. Josh, what was your high spot feud of 2019?
High spot feud. What do you do? Do you do Cody and Dustin?
Mm.
You know, like what do you do? I had to go with the matches that made the feud complete.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it had to be Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano.
Okay.
For me, like that feud culminated with the best matches.
Had some really great promos as well.
With great
the dad's the pizza.
Going into the pizza joint. Adam Cole, like, pinning his picture up against the wall.
Yeah. Going to his old wrestling gym.
The old wrestling gym. And then, like, you know, like him shit-talking all the wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like, give up. Like you want to hold this belt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was so good.
And that's, like, I think that's even a thing where it's, like, that was something that, like, that characterization and that storytelling was something that, like, even our resident wrestling skeptic, Connor, like, understood the stakes and the emotion and the, like, core of that feud. And, like, I think that's a great point.
Like, if you look at the matches that came out of that, you know, like, you know, if you look at last year, like Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, I would say that's a better feud.
Yeah.
But this was a pretty good fucking feud. And then, like, you know, the matches they had at, like, NXT TakeOver New York, Toronto,
it's a thing where it's like Gargano Ciampa is going to be a defining feud of this generation of wrestling in the same way that like, Michael's Hart was like a defining feud of that era.
But that's I would say, like, Michael's Hart is probably the best feud of all time.
Sure.
But for this analogy, it's in the conversation.
Okay? Yeah. And that, like, like Gargano Cole is going to be like the Hart Austin.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah.
Like, this is still like an excellent, like, 9.5 out of 10. It's just not quite as good as the other feud that this guy had.
4.5 bald head. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. But for me, like, for my money and, like, the matches I saw with those guys, that's got to be the feud of 2019.
And I could really feel, like, the passion and, like, the intensity in every one of their matches. It's not like they ever had a match that was kind of like meh.
And Johnny Gargano's like the best in the business right now, the best white meat babyface. Like, if they book him right, like, he's the best guy. And then Adam Cole is such a cool heel.
Yeah, I love him. You know what I mean?
Like, there's so much there that works. And the fans love both of these people equally. And they can, like, fucking go in the ring.
Yeah.
Adam Cole is one of my faves right now. Like, he's amazing.
I'm gonna jump in on this love in for Adam Cole, because my high spot feud of the year was, and, like, maybe this is kind of a cheap out, but I think, like, the Undisputed Era versus NXT.
Okay.
Like, as cool. a feud, like, the narrative and the story of them.
Like, all the gold.
All the gold, and, like, the whole thing where it was, like, was Roddy on the outs, or were they going to bring him back in? Like, was he going to feud with Adam Cole for the title, or, like, that? And, like, he ended up coming back in and winning the North American Championship. But it's, like, it's been, like, them collecting all of the gold, and that was a great story of, like, everybody that they were feuding with, of, like, the Street Profits and Velveteen Dream and Johnny Gargano. And I think, like, lesser writing would have really fallen off once they had all the gold.
Yep.
But, like, since they've come back with everything, it's elevated everybody else in NXT. It's made the Keith Lee, Dominic Dijakovic storyline, like, that I really didn't give a shit about at the start of that.
Yeah.
Is now, I think, one of the most compelling things in NXT. I want to see those two win the Dusty Rhodes Classic and then eventually be tag champs.
It's almost like the Shield dynamic, right? Where it's totally, like, as a unit, they're stronger than anybody else.
Yeah. And but it's a thing where it's like, in as a unit, they're stronger than everybody else, but in their individual feuds that they have, they are elevating everybody else in that company.
They're just so good.
You like, know, the whole interplay right now of, like, whether it's going to be Finn Balor or Tommaso Ciampa or Johnny Gargano that comes back against Cole is, like, you have such a great top of the card.
I feel like it's going to be, like, Ciampa, though. It's because, like, they're keeping him far enough away from it.
Yeah.
That it's got to be it. Like, he didn't take the pinfall on
it'll
NXT.
Be great.
It's got to be.
It'll be great when that happens. Yeah. And, like, I love Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish together in the tag team.
They're great. And, like, everything that Roddy's doing, everybody that he's feuded with, like, Pete Dunne and Velveteen and, like, everything.
They're all incredible.
They've done such a good job of just, like, staking out who in the company is at what point on the card based on who they're feuding with within the Undisputed Era. And it's just, like, it's such perfect fucking writing. Like, I The only other thing that came close to this for me was Kofi and Daniel in the lead up to Mania.
Yeah, that was on my consideration list.
And like Kofi Mania was perfect, and that moment was great.
Yeah.
But like that was one moment that was like really a month and a half of storytelling.
Yeah.
Whereas this feud of like Undisputed Era feuding with the entire NXT roster has been the entire year, and it's been so good.
Yeah,
that's great. Are we also doing matches?
No.
Okay.
I figured it was a thing where it's like match of the year is like one very hard to pick, and within feud of the year and wrestler of the year and pay-per-view of the year, it's going to come up. We're going to hit all of our favorite matches.
No, totally.
Matches, you know?
I don't know what happened in my notes, but I did matches. So I'm extrapolating from my best matches for the best feud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had a really hard time with best feuds. So the one that I went with was Io Shirai versus Shayna Baszler.
Mm,
yeah.
But in retrospect, I guess it's not like as powerful because it's not as long. If like, it's not as.
I mean, like, I think it was long. It was long enough, and it
well,
was,
the thing is it's like, still happening. Like, yeah. It's still being built upon right yeah. now. Where like. That was the reason Io broke.
Yeah.
Became broken.
Broken like, Io Shirai.
They moved on to like Shayna Baszler and Rhea Ripley, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so like.
Yeah, but I think Io still like could. They could pull the trigger on Io and Shayna at any point. Like, I think
I
Io
hope so,
never.
Yeah.
She never like finished her feud with Shayna. At least mm-hmm. she hasn't yet. She just became unhinged because yeah. of her feud with Shayna, because she couldn't beat her, and she was always so close. She, like, lost her shit and became, like, this dark person, and she hasn't had that rematch one-on-one with Shayna since.
It would be great for, like, them to tell, like, more of a story with Io. Because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I feel like Io right now has been, like, delegated to just, like, badass heel.
Yeah.
But there's no real story behind the badass heel. You know what I mean? Like, there was at first.
There was at first. When she first turned on Candace, yeah.
But now she's just, like, just a badass heel who's, like, an incredible wrestler and, like, all this mm-hmm. stuff.
That's
but,
true.
Like, you're
they
right.
don't have
you know
a feud
mean?
For
like,
her.
Like, there's no story around Io Shirai right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's, like, Io Shirai's heel turn was probably one of the better and more memorable heel turns of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, her feud with Shayna Baszler being the inciting incident to that heel turn is like, that's a great argument for why that is, like, yeah. a great feud.
They also had, like, it was, like, it wasn't just one match. Like, it was a big, long, like, multiple match thing. And, like, if you recall, like, do you remember
and,
how
well,
fucking
like the-
crazy it was when, like, she fell out of the fucking cage
mm-hmm.
like when
yeah,
she
yeah.
was smashing her with the door and she fell out of the cage and then Shayna won based on that bullshit
yeah.
like her just falling out.
Well, and
it's
also like they built to that really well with like they had their first match that was like relatively clean
mm-hmm.
they had their second match that Io like flipped the fuck out at the end of and
well
like,
she lost clean
and
then
like,
she freaked
and she like
out.
Beat the
yeah.
shit out of her with
Candace,
a chair
with
and,
Candace LeRae, right?
No.
When she had a kendo
she lost to Shayna, beat the shit out of Shayna with a kendo stick and then did that moonsalt with the chair onto Shayna post match
right. yeah, yeah.
Oh, maybe it was a chair.
So that was like a little bit of her getting like a little kind of unhinged and like mad, and then her finally like snapping. Like they built it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like I think that was a great feud. That's a fantastic pick.
Yeah, I think I'm like I get very taken with moments, with like really awesome impactful moments, and for
and,
me
and like that's what wrestling is
yeah
like the moments that you remember.
Wrestling I really
is
remember
like
their moments
right
yeah, yeah.
It's just like that's all it is.
It's just like yeah you don't remember like every promo or every fucking rest hold, you just remember like those spots you
yeah.
know like
yeah
fucking like who name
fucking
like
Vince McMahon and Stone Cold
shaking hands, you know?
No,
like,
the gunshot bang.
Yeah, the gunshot bang 316. Or like name one other spot from Undertaker Mankind apart from Mankind being thrown off the top of Hell in a Cell.
Mankind being chokeslammed through the top of Hell in a
Cell. Okay, yeah. But it's like those are the two things that everybody remembers, and there's like nothing else from that match that really stuck. It was those two moments
sure.
in like a 20-minute match.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice.
Let's get on to... So we went from feud to pay-per-view. I honestly think I have some kind of buck wild choice. Like, I couldn't believe when I was like going through it and I like wrote this down, I couldn't believe what was my high and what was my botched.
There's a lot of highs.
So I'm gonna kick off.
There are a lot of highs. Yeah.
My high spot pay-per-view of the year was WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, that's a great choice.
Like,
oh, you mean the WrestleMania I was at?
But it's like that WrestleMania card. Like, I was going over cards and cards and cards, and I was trying to think. I was like, AEW's been great so far, but nothing that they've done has been like top to bottom fantastic. No, it's been like they're building things. NXT's been really great, but I think like there wasn't like a takeover card for me that was like as good as like some of the takeovers that we had last year.
I'm gonna tell you different.
We'll get there. And it was just like WrestleMania. I looked at that card, and like I was thinking like we got like Rollins winning, we got Kofi Mania, we got Becky like main eventing.
It's a solid choice, Campbell.
Even like some of the in between stuff I thought was like really fantastic.
Yeah, that was the WrestleMania of, like, where everything went really well.
Yeah.
Everybody got their wish.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And
three
like,
times over.
That's what WrestleMania should be.
Yeah.
At the core of WrestleMania, it should be the card that everybody gets what they want.
Yeah.
And the storylines are paid off ultimately.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there should be nothing continuing past WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being there live, I felt it was a little long.
Sure.
Maybe.
It was definitely long, but it like...
It always
but, is. But like I had a good time at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I will say this. It wasn't WrestleMania. It was the night before WrestleMania.
Okay.
Or maybe two nights before WrestleMania. It was NXT TakeOver New York.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Ring of Honor.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Is that TakeOver 25?
No.
Okay. That's a different one.
Spoilers
to what Lauren's going to say.
No. That's not my best. But I was really thinking about NXT New York a lot. So I'm interested to see what you thought.
I was there live. And I have to say, like, from front to back, that card was one of the most enjoyable nights that I ever... Like, I screamed myself hoarse.
That was one of the really great Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano ones, right?
So that was the 2 out of 3 falls.
Okay.
Johnny Gargano. And that was an amazing match.
The first 2 out of 3 falls.
Also on that card was Walter versus Pete Dunne.
Huge. Mm.
And that was the first time I've ever seen both of those guys live. And man alive, what a fucking match. Those guys were hitting each other so hard.
Did you feel the slaps?
Oh my God, like my chest. I was like, oh. It was resonating in my soul.
Did you see the flesh rippling?
Yeah. But also they had like Aleister Black and Ricochet versus like the War Raiders.
See, that was kind of my thing is like when I was looking at that, I felt like that tag team, like that pairing of Aleister Black and Ricochet was something that I didn't really like from the first half of the year.
Yeah,
and
like
that was kind of a sour spot on that card for me because I didn't really care for it.
But like, it was a good match. And then
fine.
Like, and but they also had like Baszler versus Io Shirai.
Hell yeah.
Like, and they had like Bianca Belair and Kairi Sane in that match. They had Matt Riddle versus Velveteen Dream.
Mm.
It was such a solid card.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. And like every match, I don't think there was a snoozer. Like, I think the women's match was like the match that like everybody was trying to like catch their breath after like the Walter Pete Dunne
match.
Which
we've talked about before that like the women's match always gets that spot.
They always get the spot. Like, but like even still, that was such a good match.
Yeah.
And, I feel like top to bottom, like that card, I haven't gone back and watched it since, but like my memory of that match, that was probably the highlight of that weekend.
Yeah.
And it was the first night I was in New York.
It wasn't the Jay White pancake thing?
Listen, I love Jay White. You know how much I love Jay White. That was second.
Lauren, what was your pape of the year?
All right, so speaking of women always getting the short end of the stick, the worst part on the card, I don't know if it's recency bias, but for me, TakeOver War Games, NXT TakeOver War Games, November 23, was one of the best pay-per-views of the entire year.
It was awesome.
If we review
especially
this card.
Especially the women's.
Yeah, like
the women's, it starts with the fucking banger women's war games. Yep. The first ever women's war games that was better than any war games I've ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
It was fucking amazing. It had, like, just awesome team dynamics and, like, fucking Dakota Kai turning on Tegan Nox and, like, and then, like, the really cool, like a bunch of them left, and then it was just Shayna, and like Shayna had her whole team, and it was her versus Rhea Ripley and Candace.
Yeah,
and those two were the only two left, and you're like, it's insurmountable odds, they'll never be able to do it. And then
Ray
they had
John
just,
Cena moment.
Just, yeah, they just like they beat them like, odds, and it was amazing. Like, and yeah. they had the handcuffs.
That's like the
and
thing
it's
is like
Rhea's like. Rise. Yeah.
What a star Rhea is.
She's like 20 fucking 2 or 23 years
That's
old.
That's insane.
Yeah. So
How
weird.
Am I 15 years older than this person?
It's super
She's
weird.
Already a bigger star than I'll ever be in my yeah. life.
Well, it's like that, like, that is like a borderline career defining moment of mm-hmm. like the handcuffs and like just kicking the shit out of Shayna Baszler and pinning her.
She's so believable.
And it's yeah. like yeah. the thing that stands out about that match in particular is that it's like I feel like War Games thus far in NXT has been an excuse to get a bunch of guys in the ring and have a big spot fest.
Yeah. It's never usually about advancing a lot of story.
And that was the thing is that like that women's match, like they looked at what that gimmick is of the match and they were like, how can we tell the best story here? Like, how can we have a heel turn? How can we have, like, someone justifiably become the number one contender for the title?
Yeah.
And how can we have this other person, like Candace as the first person in who had to hold her own for the whole match look like a fucking absolute champ?
It was so
they
clear.
They made three people.
Three yeah. huge
they
stars.
They made three people
because Candace didn't
in
have
that match.
Fucking anything going on for her. Yep. Like, she's an amazing wrestler who they've been really dropping the ball with, not giving her
Definitely.
Any storyline, anything. Like, that woman has had nothing handed to her. And that War Games was a chance for her to shine. Like, they started off with her and Io because they were like, clearly these are the two most talented women yeah. in the fucking roster, and they're yeah. gonna hold their shit together for
and
this
they did.
Long.
They fucking
yeah.
nailed it.
They did. Yeah. They were both in there for the whole dang time, and like it was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I feel like it was a really interesting sort of curveball, like where Mia Yim was supposed to be part of that team, and you kind of thought like, what are they doing with Dakota Kai? Like, are they? Like, is this a heel turn? Like, oh, I guess. And then it really seemed like she was going to be part of the team. Like, she was like, I can do it. Like, I'll be great. And you were like, okay, so she'll be part of the team. And you don't see mm-hmm. at that point, like, you missed the heel turn.
Because it's like such, like, the whitest meat baby face.
No, but right? there was a point earlier where you were like, okay, I get it. They're setting her up for a heel turn, like, a couple weeks before, maybe? Like, a yeah. week or two prior?
Like, the week that she didn't make the team is when you thought she
yeah.
was going to turn.
And then
and she
didn't, and she kept her shit together, and you were like, oh, cool, okay. And then Mia Yim gets injured, and Dakota Kai steps up, and you're like, okay, so this is about Dakota Kai stepping up to the plate. She has to prove herself. It's going to be dope. And then she turns anyway during the War Games, and it was just stunning.
Simple wrestling, you know, yeah. like, and that shit works.
The heel like, turn, the heel turn is always so much more impactful when you don't expect it,
yeah.
right? And, like,
yeah.
that's the thing that they did with her. What about the rest of that Pape made it your high spot?
Yeah, so there's the bomb-ass women's War Games. There's a great triple threat with Damian Priest, Killian yeah, Dane, 100%. And Pete Dunne.
The
which
best
is
match
like
that Damian Priest has had
exactly
in NXT.
Exactly what I was going to say. I don't give a fuck about that dude ever.
But you
got to
feel
he...
like it's like Pete Dunne's got a big part in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all,
I, honestly,
all three
I think
of them
Pete
had a
Dunne
really
did
good show.
A lot of the heavy lifting in that match. Like, that was maybe kind of the weak point on the show for me.
Yeah.
Really, eh?
Yeah.
I really like that match, like, as a whole.
I thought it was a really exciting match. It's the best I've ever seen Damian Priest or Killian Dane do. I don't really care for either of them, especially not Damian Priest, but... They all three pulled out a really great match, and I thought it was mainly for them. It wasn't like so much about the spots, but it was more about like the storytelling throughout the entire match that I really liked.
I feel
them.
Like if I had a person to watch for in 2020, it'd be Damian Priest, right? I feel like we're all
boo. I hate that dude.
So then Baron Corbin 2.
So then there's the Finn Balor versus Matt Riddle
match.
That was
a great match.
Which was just really great. Yeah.
Finn Balor's first match back in NXT as a heel. Yeah. Like,
yeah. But like, and like, sorry to jump ahead, but Kevin Owens.
Well, you are jumping ahead, my dude.
I'm sorry. But like,
he apologized for it.
I apologize.
You can do it again. Then you have the men's War Games match.
And I'm
which
sorry
was
to
amazing.
Jump ahead.
Yeah. Kevin Owens.
But him coming out, I fucking popped so hard. Like, no, I even called it. Like, I was like.
You did call it. Josh called it ahead of time. Do you remember? All discussing, like, who it could possibly be.
Here's the thing. On pod, if you go back and listen to our Lucha Underground episode, you said it was going to be John Morrison.
I did.
No, but you called the entire fucking team other than him.
That's true.
You actually did. Like, Josh, like, legit called the entire men's War Games match, except for fucking Kevin Owens.
It was the Survivor Series. You called the Survivor Series match, and you also predicted that...
predicted Keith Lee.
You predicted that Survivor Series was going to be NXT, like, three-way matches.
Yeah.
And you called the Survivor Series team from NXT almost to a man. But then, the night of,
I was like... Kevin Owens would be amazing right now. I really think it's going to be Kevin Owens.
I remember
Owens.
You saying that.
And then, like, I explained my logic where, like, Triple H, like, had talked to Kevin Owens.
Yep.
And then I was like, it's got to be Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
I remember, like, once you said it in the thread, I was like, fuck, I hope it's Kevin Owens. That would be so sick.
It could only be Kevin Owens at that point. Because in my head, I was like, it's got to be Kevin Owens.
Yeah. To me, I was like, it could be anybody, but wouldn't it be cool? And
it's going to be Kona Reed. That's my... If there's a 20 for 2020 to watch...
Kona Reeves.
Kona Reeves, baby.
Damian Archer the or whatever finest. His fucking name is.
Damian Priest.
No.
And Kona Reeves need to tag team because they look very similar.
They do look very similar, but they have totally different vibes. I hate Damian Priest.
It has to be
Kona.
Like a Damian Sandow and The Miz situation.
Damian Priest looks like an extra from Blade Trinity.
Totally. To me, he looks like Heath Ledger in The Crow. Like, he looks like he's...
Heath Ledger wasn't in The Crow. No. Brandon Lee was in The Crow.
I know, you fucking idiot. I'm just saying Heath Ledger in The Crow. Like, he looks like Heath Ledger if he was in The Crow. Like, he's wearing all of his fucking leather fucking pants and his leather tank tops. Like, he's in... Like, he's like a fucking...
He looks like Brandon Lee as the Joker.
Oh, now I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't know why that's such a hard concept.
Remember
for you
when
to
Brandon
take
Lee was
an
the
actor
Joker?
And throw him into another universe.
I'm going to bring it down here. I'm going to talk about my botched pape of 2019.
Here we go.
And again, I'm surprised at myself for picking this.
I guess you're like done talking about the men's War Games match.
I feel like we said all we need to say.
All we talked about was Kevin Owens, but okay.
How about the spot from the top with Adam Cole? And
that was fucked.
Yeah.
The air raid crash off the top was fucked.
Tommaso Ciampa and like bless Adam Cole's heart for taking that fucking bump.
On the weekend that he had.
And Britt Baker.
Britt Baker. Yeah. And the crowd. The Britt Baker challenge. That was fucked up.
Yeah.
It was a great War Games match. And it was a great pape. Like, top to bottom. Really, really solid.
It was no NXT New York.
I can tell you about my runner-up after you tell us about your best pape.
It was WrestleMania.
Or your...
worst.
Worst pape.
So my botch pape... I can't fucking believe that I'm saying this, but it was Wrestle Kingdom.
Really? I have that in like my considerations for top pape.
Man, ooh, I
for top.
Again, yeah. Again, it's one of those things where
you
it's like I wanted to
botched.
Talk about things that I had high expectations for and I was just kind of underwhelmed by.
Okay. Oh, and so sidebar, are we getting together for Wrestle Kingdom?
Sure.
When is it?
It's like January.
January 4th, every year.
Yeah.
Jesus.
At the Tokyo Dome, brother.
I we're getting like together it just for just happened, but okay, yes.
We're going to do a live pod for my place.
for both nights. We're going to be there for 48 hours.
Yeah.
We're, 48 hours of live podcasting.
Breakfast,
mimosas.
Yeah, I'm down to do wrestling. We'll figure something out. We'll figure it out. Got to see Ibushi win it all, you know? Sorry, yeah, Wrestle Kingdom this past year. I remember what like you and I watched this together. We hung out. We didn't watch it live, but we downloaded it. We watched it after the fact.
Yeah.
And I remember coming away from that just being like, wow, what a fucking disappointment. Yeah. Like, you have such high expectations for the Tokyo Dome show. You have such high expectations for New Japan in general. And I think New Japan this year with everybody leaving for AEW is like, you kind of talk about like NXT going through rebuilding years, right? Like in past where like NXT builds people up and they all go to the main roster and NXT has to spend like 6 months sort of bringing back up the hype, like rebuilding all of the people that they had. And I very much felt like New Japan this year with AEW had kind of a rebuilding year.
But if you look at like the contrast between Wrestle Kingdom and the finals of the G1.
Yeah.
The finals of G1 was so good.
Totally.
Yeah. So with Kenta and like everything, like
they got their shit together.
Got their shit together. Like it took them about 6 months, and then they got their shit together, and they had a really good G1, and the Super Juniors was good.
But even with like Wrestle Kingdom, like they had Omega versus Okada again, right? Was that the match?
I don't remember. I think it was
Way to do your research, bud.
But, like, there was, like, it was Jericho and Naito, right?
Hang on. Let me look up the card now. Because I just remember, like, my whole thing on this was that...
there was a couple, like, really solid matches.
It was Tanahashi Omega, which I thought was fine.
Oh, yeah, it was a great match.
It was okay. Naito beating Jericho, Jay White beating Okada... Ishimori versus Kushida. Like, my whole thing is that because they knew Kushida was leaving, they knew all the guys from the Elite were leaving, it very much felt like there was very little stakes. You kind of knew the outcome of every match before
stakes
it happened.
Stakes have never been lower.
Right? Yeah. Because it was like, alright, we gotta move the titles off of all these guys before they go.
But those matches, I feel like fondly about those.
I think my whole thing is that, like, I really wish that, like, it very much felt like a little bit of a kind of like New Japan felt a little spurned by these people leaving, and it felt like they gave them a very bitter farewell. Like, I would have liked a little bit more of a thank you, a little bit more of a fanfare for like Omega leaving, but for the Bucks leaving,
really like
for
the low spot of the year for you.
It wasn't the low spot of the year. It wasn't the worst thing.
It was like,
you know, like
spot.
it was no fucking like Saudi Arabia crown jewel.
We'll get to that.
But like for me, it was just a thing where it's like the last few Wrestle Kingdoms in particular have been so fucking good.
I get
that
you. Like in contrast,
like the last few Wrestle Kingdoms, I've come out of like January 4th being like, all right, that's the best pay per view that this year is going to have, bar none. And I came out of this year's Wrestle Kingdom just being like, yeah, that was good.
Like, usually you're juice, but you're not juice this year.
Yeah, it was totally a thing where it's like, I don't think that Wrestle Kingdom was a bad pay-per-view by any means.
But like, in contrast...
But in terms of, like, your disappointment.
Yeah, it was just a thing where I was just like, like, I came out of Wrestle Kingdom this year feeling the same way that I feel about, like your average WWE pay-per-view. Where it was just like, yeah, that had some stuff that was cool, but like at the end of it was just like, all right, sure, you know, we'll see what they got going on in a couple of months. Like,
now I get that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, and again, I think like the biggest thing for me is that it very much felt like a little bit of a sour grapes on the people leaving.
Do you think it's because of the year before, like the bar was set so high? Like,
totally. I think
like
that's
Omega,
like part of
Okada
it.
Yeah.
Was like the match of the century.
Totally.
Arguably. Like it was such a good match.
Yeah.
And then like, I kind of get that.
But
Do you also feel like maybe because we knew, like you were saying, like you feel like they should have done more of a fanfare for those who were leaving, and it was a huge portion of their roster that was leaving.
Because it was Omega lost his title, Jericho lost his title,
Cody
lost his title, the Young Bucks lost their title, Kushida lost his title, and all five of those matches, which is like a pretty huge portion of the card, it didn't feel like a, hey, like, thanks
like
for being here.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for fucking, like, bringing eyes to this product and putting on the matches that you've put on.
I get it.
It very much felt like a good luck in your future endeavors. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
We need,
like,
to push our guys who are staying with us.
That was a thing. It very much felt like a very corporate-minded Wrestle Kingdom. And so for me, that left a sour taste in my mouth. That was my botched pay-per-view of the year. Because it could have been so fucking good with the card that they had. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Tell me about Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So Saudi Arabia was a complete joke. Which one do you want to start with? Like, I feel like I'm tied between...
Do you want
between...
you to pick one and I'll pick the other?
Sure. I'm gonna go with Undertaker versus Goldberg.
Sure.
Yeah.
Again, from front to back, I mean, this is just like a money shill. Like, some prince being like, oh, I remember seeing this guy 30 years ago on TV. What's Yokozuna doing today? You know? It's like, well, he's dead. Okay, well, how about Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
How about Goldberg? How about The Undertaker?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so Goldberg and Undertaker go out there, and I feel like this is the only match that really needs to be focused on because
sure.
They go out there, and Goldberg, within the first 30 seconds of the match, concusses himself on the ring post, gets a concussion, and then they try to, like, kind of maneuver through a match for the next 10 minutes, which is way too long.
Yeah.
Goldberg tries picking up The Undertaker a couple times. Undertaker tries, like, lifting Goldberg up in, like, some kind of suplex. Goldberg's so concussed that he can't even lift himself. The whole thing was a fucking disaster.
The fucking tombstone?
You never want to see The Undertaker wrestle ever.
Like, ever. But like, it wasn't even his fault. Like, I agree with the sentiment that I don't want to see The Undertaker wrestle again. But, like, if you watch Goldberg's last few matches, they had the booking for Goldberg down.
Like, yeah. He should have,
like,
done better.
Jackhammer. That's
he
the Goldberg.
He can do those and sell those. Yeah.
Goldberg formula. Yeah. You're easy. You're good. But, like, when a man is so concussed that he can't even, like, bring himself to get a tombstone properly.
Well, that tombstone, like, Goldberg's head compressed like a melon.
Yeah.
Like, it was like... You could see his skull impact on the mat.
Aye.
Man alive. Anyway, so that was horrible. That's got to be the botched pay-per-view for the year for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go on, like, a long, contrived whatever.
I definitely don't think Wrestle Kingdom was the worst of the year. I definitely think that, like, the Saudi shit was far worse.
But it was, like, the best laid plans that they couldn't even execute properly.
Yeah.
So that's got to be botched.
Lauren, what was your botched pay-per-view of the year?
I also said Saudi Arabia. Like, I meant Saudi Arabia, like, as a whole, but, okay. Like, we could go with Crown Jewel.
Team Hogan versus Team Flair.
That was the main one. Bad. Yeah. Team Hogan versus Team Flair.
Like, didn't Seth Rollins say, like, I would be honored to be on Team Hogan? And it's like,
such a dweeb.
Pump the brakes, buddy.
Let's gear back on this a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a nerd.
And, like, The Fiend defeated Seth Rollins. And
well, that was when The Fiend won the title, so at least, like, something kind of good came out of that, but, like, should have happened the month before, right?
And that's when they had the ladies, Natalia
and
was it Lacey?
Lacey Evans,
yeah,
fighting in, like, real big shirts,
yeah, real big
because they gotta,
because they have to, because they're women,
yeah,
and they're lucky to even be there at
all. They weren't even allowed to drive there,
yeah,
and then no one was allowed to leave.
That was a real botch spot.
That was probably the worst botch spot of all. Oh, you mean, like, the horrible, corrupt Saudi prince who hired you wouldn't, like, fucking let you leave?
Lauren, I don't know what you're talking about. It was engine problems.
But that led to the...
More deals?
Well, no,
That's what that led to! Was the entire roster being held hostage, and it led to an even longer deal with the Saudis. What?
What I was going to say is that led
to... This just went so well. Why not?
The only episode of SmackDown that I've watched since AEW started was, like, the beginnings of the NXT invasion that led to, like, Survivor Series, which was, like...
100%.
Like, man, the honestly, Survivor Series was a contender for Pape of the Year.
Yeah.
Like, legit, a very silver lining to a very dark fucking cloud.
Yeah.
Like, all of that NXT shit. came from them not having a roster because they were being held hostage in Saudi Arabia, yeah. which is a very real and very scary thing.
So thank you, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Right? Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
We're gonna cap it off with our high spot and botch spot of a weekly show. Who had the best or the worst?
I feel like we're all gonna be in agreement, pretty much.
I think so.
AEW.
No.
AEW for what?
Weekly.
No.
Oh.
No.
My best is not NXT. At all.
NXT for weekly show easily.
I had a split between the two, but
NXT for high spot, for sure.
I'm gonna lean towards AEW.
Yeah, why don't you tell us why, Josh? Because we're in agreement for NXT. Let's hear what you have
to say. Fair enough. So AEW has had production problems that they've overcome. They've had, like, I would say, like, even, like, booking problems that they've overcome. But I will say this. This is a new company that has started up. And I feel like over the last, 2 months?
They haven't had as long.
They've done such a phenomenal job. Of not only, like, you know, like, generating interest, but, like, competing on, like, a real level with the WWE product.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's dismissive to be like, you know, like, yeah, like, just because, like, WWE's got, like, higher production, like, more superstars, yada, 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 it's like we should give the nod to you. I feel like AEW, for a new company that's, like, just kind of, like, finding the ground, I feel like they've done a great job.
Okay.
That's a good point. I don't think that like, it's true that AEW hasn't had as long to prove themselves, and they have overcome a lot. I don't tend to judge based solely on production value. I don't think that's AEW's problem. I think that they don't serve a lot of their wrestlers, and they're not really great with storylines for a good half, if not more, of their roster. Especially the women's roster is extremely underserved. And for me, it's just NXT is, like, a good old faithful, very dependable, excellent product week to week.
I get what you're saying, but, like, you got to give a company time to figure out what they're doing.
I can give them props, but they're not my best weekly show for the year.
Yeah.
That's fair. I'm in the same boat where it's like NXT the whole year has been
always
great.
Exciting.
And very much going head to head with AEW has really stepped up their game recently.
Yeah.
And that's it's funny because it's like I prioritize watching Dynamite over NXT. Like I will watch Dynamite live and I will catch up on NXT. Because I'm much more interested in what's going on with this new product, and I'm much more invested in them as a company, as a competitor, to see what's going on.
Yeah, I feel
they're
like
excited. They're exciting because they're new, but NXT
is solid.
Is solid. But it's, like, always good every week. You know that.
Like, I feel like Dynamite's doing a few things way better than NXT is doing.
Okay,
and I feel like NXT is, like, again, like, always solid. Like, I love the NXT. That's my second favorite show.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like Dynamite's trying new things. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like Kenny Omega's mainly to blame. And I'm going to call him out right now on this. Kenny Omega's mainly to blame for the women's division. Because, like, he's trying too much. And he's not building any stories. He just wants his Joshis in there.
Stop pushing Emi Sakura.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. Just build, like, a couple storylines.
Yeah.
Just build a couple storylines.
But it's also, like, they would be able to build a couple storylines if they had more than one women's match every week. They only have one women's match in a 2-hour show.
Well,
that's indefensible.
Last week they had two, the week before they had two. They did.
And they only have one, like, they have a promo spot. They definitely didn't, Josh, for one thing. They only have, like...
What were the two matches that they had this past week?
They had, what's her name?
They had Big Swole versus Emi Sakura.
Yeah, and then they had...
They had a promo with Brandy talking about how she shaves people's heads now.
And Penelope Ford was a valet.
Yeah.
They didn't have a second women's match.
Listen, you've caught me without my wrestling guide.
But it's, so my thing is like women's division is like a huge, like I almost considered AEW for my botched spot because specifically because of the women's division, because there is such a large portion of their roster that they don't know what they're doing with, like the Brandy being like the chief Brandy officer,
it's ridiculous, right? Or
magic powers. Yeah. They don't, and it's a thing where it's also so like,
close.
But the wrestling is so good.
The wrestling is so good, and the stories that they're telling are being told so well.
But I feel like you're gonna have a lot of trial and error, and it's like I appreciate the fact it's refreshing that, like, you know, MJF's out there cutting promos. Yeah. Cody's like the best. If for my money, like Cody right now is the best babyface in the entire wrestling industry.
Hard disagree.
I don't know. Have you heard the fan reaction to Cody Rhodes? It's ridiculous.
I've heard the reaction in this household.
I know you have.
I've heard this fan's reaction. But his whole thing that the promo that he cut the other week where he was just like, I'm going to put up my watch. I'm going to put up my car.
That was awful.
I'm going to put up all this money. It's just like, how did a Ric Flair heel promo all of a sudden become a face thing? Like, this doesn't endear me to you. You come off as like a fucking spoiled brat asshole.
Exactly.
Fuck
I was
you.
Like, you don't care about these nice things that you have. This is just to prove
he's just
that
being
you're
real.
No, this is just him being spoiled and being born into money that his daddy got him.
No, this all
fuck
Tony
you,
Khan.
Josh.
This all Tony Khan shit.
No. My other thing, Cody. The other reason that I am not fully
and
sold.
Also Darby Allin sucks.
Fuck you! Darby Allin is the best babyface in the business right now.
Oh my god, guys, you almost killed me.
My other thing about AEW is that, like, they're trying to lean so hard on the win-loss record.
They're trying something new,
and I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And it's more so a thing where it's like, I love the idea of the win-loss record. I like that they're trying, like, the one thing that they're doing well with their women's roster is, like, giving me, like, visual updates on, like, the rankings. That's really good. Slot. But it's like with their men's division is like all of the most compelling storylines in their men's division have absolutely nothing to do with win-loss.
They're all unsanctioned.
It's John Moxley. It's the, like, the Butcher and the Blade versus Cody Rhodes is like a really interesting debut for me right now, but it has nothing to do with win-loss record. Like, none of that matters.
And they did such a bad job of introducing the Butcher and the Blade. It's like,
and the Bunny.
I agree.
And the Bunny.
And my ass.
I can shit on a lot of stuff that AEW is doing, but like I feel like even the stuff I don't like, it's still refreshing as a wrestling fan to see something new. You know what I mean? Like, and for me, when I watch wrestling, I want something new. Like, I want like a new take on something. I want like risks being taken, and like, yeah, they're gonna misfire and they're not gonna, you know, like deliver on, like, especially with the women's division. I 100% agree.
Yeah,
they could be doing such, and the talent that they have is so good, they should be doing better.
Yeah,
but you know, as a weekly show goes, it's like I find myself more engaged with the AEW product than I am with any other product. Mm-hmm. And even though like NXT, like I'll watch NXT and I'll be like, that was a solid show.
Yeah,
front end.
Well, it's like NXT's Old Faithful, yeah. Right? And like that's the reason that I don't prioritize watching NXT every week is the thing that it's like, oh, I'll catch up on NXT because I know that it's going to be good and I know that it's going to be solid and AEW is more interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that it's a thing where it's like...
And like you like to be on all the threads and on the socials talking about it.
I'm up on the socials, you know?
So, but like for
hashtag
real...
Hashtag Baby Yoda.
But for real, Campbell, like if you didn't have that, you might not be so invested in watching Dynamite that night specifically, but it's because you want to talk about it with people, which is like a huge part of consuming a product.
Yeah.
Which means it's the best show of 2019.
It's just the most innovative and the most
engaging.
Fresh.
Yeah.
But it's not the best.
That's my thing, is that like I think I have a lot of problems with their booking right now, and that I could not in good conscience say that it is like the best. But I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that like someone is saying that.
But like, so look at Raw.
We'll get to Raw.
I know it's Raw. But like, it's apathetic.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not engaged.
Oh,
right?
Not like, it's even a little.
It's apathy.
Yeah.
Why do you care about AEW? Because it's interesting, yeah. right? Like, they're doing things right really well. Mm-hmm. They're doing things wrong really bad. It's the most engaged show. I feel like that's...
But I feel like I can be engaged with something better if I know it's good and I know they'll do me right and they'll do my ladies right also. You know? Like, I
totally get it. Like, but, like, nobody's disagreeing that NXT's not pound for pound the best wrestling show.
Sure.
That is the criteria of
the category that we're
discussing. You just said the best wrestling show. Period.
Pound for pound, the best wrestling show. But the most engaging, for my money, is got to be Dynamite. And like, if we're looking at the scale of, like, you know, it's like I've got an opinion about something going on the show, it's Dynamite.
Yep.
It does give you more to talk about.
Yeah,
I appreciate that take. Yeah. That's a good take. And
son
our
of a bitch.
What?
I appreciate that take. It's wrong.
Can we all agree on the worst weekly show?
One, two, three.
Raw. Monday Night Raw.
You went with the long form. We went with the short form.
I said, well, I was going to go with a longer form where I was going to say Monday Night Raw specifically during the wild card era.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because
that was just like, what the fuck is
we got
on?
Three guys from SmackDown. I don't know. I guess we got four now. What a bad show.
Cuck, like, storylines.
I just don't watch it anymore.
So many cuck storylines. You got Drake Maverick.
God,
you got Rusev.
Don't
you
say
got...
that word on the podcast.
Cuck's a real thing. Cuckold is better. So we got Rusev the cuckold. And then we got...
just so humiliating. Everything on that show is so humiliating to everybody featured on it and everybody watching.
Never in my life have I watched a three-hour show so many times in a year. At the end of it, I'm like,
well, fuck,
what a waste of fucking time. Yeah. What an absolute waste of my fucking time.
Well, they just killed, like, me.
It yeah. dragged everybody, like, else down too, right? It's like, even when it was a thing where it was like, oh yeah, like Raw has too much Vince, but like SmackDown's good, because that was the thing for a while, right? Yeah. Was that like SmackDown was the B show, and because of that, it was the better show because it was a little more hands off.
Mm-hmm.
And with this whole fucking wild card shit this year, it ruined both shows. It dragged down everybody on the roster, especially like because it was like WrestleMania again, like, was so good, and the lead up to WrestleMania was so good, and as soon as that finished, everybody that we were invested in. Becky, Kofi, fucking Daniel Bryan's heel run. Even Roman came out of WrestleMania with his like thing with Drew McIntyre looking really good. And it was just like all of that wild card shit just like overexposed to the people that we didn't want to see because we had to watch them twice a week.
And it was a super show again.
And it was a super show. And it was like everybody in the undercard, your Buddy Murphys, your Aleister Blacks, your like
you
all of these people that you wanted
roster.
To see.
You have such a big roster of like all these amazing people that people really want to see. And then we're seeing more Roman Reigns. We're seeing more Baron Corbin. We're seeing like all of these people.
Way too much Seth Rollins.
Way too much. And like, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit. And then I'd watch a whole show and I'd be like, nothing happened as far as storyline went. I got to the end of it. I'm like, I feel no benefit. I could have not watched a show and like got the same wrestling experience. Except I didn't waste 3 hours of my life.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing, is that like since AEW started and NXT stepped up their game, like I've gone to pay-per-view only for main roster.
Yeah.
Especially AEW.
Yeah.
And I'm... and I'm totally satisfied to just get, like, updates from people on the group or whatever, just being like, oh, so, like, Seth turned heel, I guess. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, I'm not gonna go follow up on that.
Yeah.
I appreciate the highlights, I guess, yeah. But like I do not give a fuck. I don't want to watch that show. Yeah. Like I just want to know the highlights so that the pay-per-views make sense when I watch them later.
Yeah. Well, and it's like you go into Survivor Series and it's like everything that like I hadn't watched basically any main roster other than that one SmackDown in the lead up to Survivor Series.
And that one SmackDown, like, where everybody was held up, was the best SmackDown they've put on.
Yeah.
I can't tell you in how
long. Because they had to innovate. Like, they had to do something unexpected.
Back was against the wall.
Yeah.
They had to, like, bring, like, Adam Cole, a bunch of fucking, like, NXT stars, and it was fantastic.
Well, but it was, like, Survivor Series made perfect sense to me, right? Yeah. Like, it was a thing where I was, like, I went in just for the pay-per-view, and it, like, because no story progression happens on the actual show. Nothing matters.
And like, the thing about it is, like, Survivor Series has no stakes.
Yeah.
Like, we always talk about stakes. It had no stakes.
There's no but stakes. How like, invested? Shows.
Not a ribeye. Not a strip loin. Yeah. Not a flat iron. No stakes.
The stakes have never been lower.
There's some butcher humor for you.
Yeah.
I like ribeye.
But I think we're all pretty unanimous on Raw.
Yeah, being, Raw's worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because I don't want to go out on a botch spot, I don't want to go out on a low note, a critique note. I want to close out the year, and I want to say that my high spot of the year has been doing this podcast with you guys.
Thanks, Kiyama.
Honestly, we've recorded some great episodes this year. What's everybody's high spot episode of the year?
Whoa!
Episode? That would be really hard. I feel like I have, like, favorite moments, and a lot of my moments are you, Josh, being like...
Aww.
It's like you being like, yeah, that's a joke. Look it up. That's one.
I think some of my high spots... Like, I really, really liked our...
you like the Connor Glow. Ones.
Glow. I like. I was yeah, gonna the say Connor, the final yeah. deletion. Like the deletion saga was really fun for me.
For me, it was like the Glow episode.
Glow episode is underrated.
Underrated.
It is
looking
at the stats,
least...
it's the lowest played episode. If you're listening right now and you haven't listened to our fucking Glow episode, you download that shit right fucking now.
And then our Power episode. I think
Power is really Power is
good. I think over the last year, we've all done a really good job of like finding our comfort in the podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Like. Just like our voice and like our conversation flow and all that. So I'm really proud of all of us and like how good we've done.
No.
If we haven't patted ourselves on the back enough here and you have something nice to say about us.
Leave it on our Facebook.
Yeah, you hit us up on Facebook. You go on your podcasting app of choice. You hit those five ball of the heads.
Yeah, leave us a rating, a review.
Yeah. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You can email us.
Facebook.
Don't cold shots. Look us up. You'll find us pretty quick.
And thank you for listening to us this year.
Yeah.
What a 2019. Thank you. Thank you, Lauren's mom.
Thank you specifically, JP Sebastian and Jerry.
Yay, Jerry.
But thanks, everybody.
We really appreciate it. We're just some schmucks. I know nothing about wrestling.
I'll tell you what. You know who's in my 20 to watch in 2020? Stone Cold Shots.
Oh.